Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all gotta stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday.
What's up?
What's up? It's not a pretty day out. A little rain going on. It's muggy, but we're making it through. It's a Friday.
Yeah, the mugginess I could definitely do without, but like, oh no. Like, we've had good weather this week.
The rain. My lawn has desperately needed rain.
Yeah.
I got really excited.
Every blade of grass is like celebrating right now.
Now, I do have to look at the weather over the weekend to be like, ooh, is this prime mowing time or is it going to be 95 and like if I walk out there, I'll burst into flames?
Hey, you know what? Let's find out together
right now. So part of me wanted to like keep it like in like a secret till I wake up and walk outside and go, yeah, now.
We're going to find this out together.
Okay. All right.
It looks pretty dastardly.
If you ask dastardly?
Me. Dastardly.
Yep.
I love that. So, tomorrow.
It's not great.
Tomorrow, just mostly cloudy.
Okay.
High of like 84-ish.
I'm very busy tomorrow. It's Sunday. Sunday's the day.
Isolated thunderstorms. So they'll be in the pocket.
So I got my rain just in a bit of a cluster here.
The mowing is not an option this weekend, it sounds like.
It seems like, and then Sunday, high of 88. Tuesday, high of 86. Wednesday, it rains again in the morning. But then, like, Wednesday through Saturday, you're looking at, like, maybe 81 is the high.
Okay. That's workable then.
Yeah,
that's workable.
You can work when the Wednesday next week is probably your beginning pocket for mowing the lawn again without, like, combusting.
Okay. That's not really great, but we can work around it. We can figure that out. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, hanging with you here on the Nortown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you, of course, by Nortown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Nortown. Shop online at nortownauto.com. And, of course, training camp coverage, as it is day three, from St. John Fisher, is brought to you by Fiegel Carr and Joyce, your border attorneys. By Outlet Liquor, when you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. The Bills are on the practice field. They've gotten day three underway. Still no pads. We'll inform you when that does happen, but there are some injury notes, as of course, yesterday, AJ Epenesa and Dorian Williams both left practice early. Today, neither are practicing. Epenesa with an ankle injury, Williams with a calf injury. The injuries somewhat are building up, but no one seems that concerned. So it has kind of left me not being as concerned. But it's still not a great way to start camp, especially before the pads even come on. And that's where the hitting actually starts.
Right.
For some of these guys to already be down. But it, you know, fingers crossed, knocking on wood. So far, nothing too bad up to this point. Nothing too bad. I mean, even the stuff with, you know, Justin Fields.
Right. The toe injury. And as Jeremy said it perfectly yesterday, it's cart season.
Oh, yeah. Mike Shope and the Bulldog were talking about this yesterday, too. The reporters also get to a point where they word it better.
Right.
He wasn't carted off the field. He was carted into the locker room. Or he was carted into the locker room.
Or into the dorms or wherever people are.
Because when we hear carted off the field, you think they're laying on the field. They can't get up. There might be an air cast somewhere. And then they're taken off and everyone, you know, is on a knee. Like, we all have that picture. We all know it. We've all, in some ways, sort of experienced it as sports fans. That's not true anymore, though, for the most part.
Right.
Those injuries, of course, still happen. But being carted off the field does not mean 100% what it used to mean. But you still see those tweets,
yes.
You see those reports, and your heart still drops. Because nothing has changed in the actual reporting of it, but how it actually is done has very much changed.
If that man needs to be put on a cart, it's going to be reported as such.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also exactly what we said yesterday. Why would we have you walking on it if we're going to look at it?
Yeah, we're
why make it worse if you are currently in pain from a 300-pound man stepping on and dislocating your toe. That doesn't feel good.
Well, specifically his non-big toe.
That's worse.
So, well, here now here's the thing. I saw a bunch of people asking, like, what digit it could be. Well, we know it's not the big toe, and the pinky toe has its own name. It's just one of the middle three.
It's one of the middle three, and...
Which, to be fair, it might be all three of them. They're pretty, you know, they're kind of tight together.
But it's also worse. Your pinky toe's so small that it's an annoyance.
Yeah, but that helps balance, doesn't it?
Yes.
You know, you don't want that totally dislocated. It's going to screw up your balance.
Correct.
Isaiah likely wishes his were after how week one went last year.
That's right.
There it is.
That's right. That's right. That's tough.
There it is. But
that's tough.
But the middle three, yeah, I feel like those ones, it would be worse. Like, if you had to choose to stub a toe right now, not dislocate one, obviously, but if you had to choose to stub a toe right now, which one are you going with?
I mean, probably the big toe, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. You're not picking the middle three. I'll tell you that.
You're not picking the middle three. I think it's just harder. Like, you'd have to do, like, you'd have to have somebody step on your foot to have it happen. You're not doing that naturally.
I mean, you could get the only way to stub those, I feel like, is like your foot's at a weird angle and you hit something dead on.
Yeah.
And like you don't miss it barely where like you hit the pinky toe.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am talking about the sciences of stubbing your toe at 10 in the morning.
By the way, a little bit of Jersey news coming out in the last 10 minutes.
Good. I want to get over this.
Every team that's part of the rivalries is announcing that their rival jersey will be shown, will be unveiled on August 28th. Miami's a part of this now. Seattle's a part of this in San Francisco. New England was the first team I saw. The Jets are a part of this as well. And Arizona. I have yet to see the Bills post anything. I just looked just to make sure to see like, hey, are we getting the rivals jerseys? You know, the reveal on the 28th. I think every team has done it. New England, Arizona, the Jets, Miami, 49ers, Seattle, and the Rams. Who does that leave? The Bills.
The Bills.
Is there another team I'm forgetting out west? I don't think so.
No.
So it's really just the Bills. We're just waiting for them to announce. And a bunch of these teams have announced it, you know, in the last 10 minutes. So, yeah. It looks like the rivalry jersey is going to be released on August 28th. That should be interesting because normally the rules, Derek, for jerseys and helmets.
Yep.
For helmets specifically, you can only have the three.
Correct.
And the Bills already now will have those. They'll have their normal white ones they've had for the number of years.
Yes.
We've got the standing buffalo, which is going to be worn twice, and then the red helmet on the 18th or for week 18.
Which I don't understand how that counts. It's the same helmet. It's just with a different decal.
Yeah, but I think instead of like peeling it off, they literally just new helmets, the decals on there, and it just kind of stays. So that's why.
Probably.
It's technically an alternate look, even though it is like the same thing.
Yeah, I don't know if the jerseys count towards that. I mean, I don't really know how many teams actually have more than three jersey combinations realistically. But I know the helmet one was three. But with the rivalry jerseys, it's not going to be the 90s look because they already have the 90s helmet. And the rivalries, I would imagine, want to do their own thing now that the Bills are kind of bringing in the 90s helmet for their own game, their own thing. So that's good. That's going to be a fourth look. It's going to be a lot of different jersey combinations this year for the Bills.
It's exciting, though.
It is exciting.
As a jersey aficionado.
Yeah. Well, especially for the Bills, who kind of haven't done a lot in this whole, like, sort of jersey renaissance for a lot of teams. A lot of teams have gone to the whiteout looks. We know Cleveland has, Minnesota has. The Saints are doing it this year. The Browns, for whatever it's worth, have like their whole brown look going on.
Look at the Packers.
Packers and Steelers both go their old retro 1930s, 40s kind of look.
Right.
The Bills have, and look, as someone that is not the biggest junkie for this, I have very much liked that they've stayed the course and just gone, you know, white helmet. The biggest change they had there from a few years ago was they got rid of the gray face mask and they got the white ones that make it really pop. But, I mean, they're going to have a lot of different looks this year. They're going to have a lot of different looks. I mean, I'll also say this too. I was not the biggest fan of the 90s red helmet. I mean, I grew up with like the 90 or the red helmet with the navy blue jerseys. And Joe, I know you're a big fan of them, but for me, I can't stand them.
Well, here's your good news.
But I love the standing buffalo. I like that look. It's different from what everything else is. It genuinely feels like a throwback and it doesn't look bad because I think a lot of throwbacks can look bad. Some of them are great. but a lot of them do look bad. So I'm glad to see that's back for 2 weeks. One on the road against Atlanta with their throwback jerseys, the red helmets and the black jerseys. That should be awesome.
Yep.
And then once at home against Tampa, would love if Tampa wore the throwbacks. I don't think that's happening.
Well, yeah, if they hit the creamsicles. Well,
I don't believe that's happening, but that would be really cool. So, yeah, it's looking like it's going to be August 28th. I have not seen the Bills actually announce it themselves, but almost every other Rivals team this year has done so, that the reveal will be on August 28th. Which, I'm glad we finally got a reveal. This was announced during the draft.
Right.
So this also kind of tells me...
This was something that's been driving our producer, Joseph Calley, absolutely insane.
I just want to know.
Yeah.
Is it so difficult to... You made an announcement for the announcement, but the announcement has yet to be announced.
You know what it feels like? It feels like that... Like, movies will do this too. Like, they'll have, like, their release date, but they haven't even started shooting the movie yet. And you're like, that's a bit premature. Like, that's kind of what this feels like. It's like they announced this was going to happen this year at the draft, and a bunch of the designers were like, we have the concept of a plan. We don't even have a plan yet. Are we sure about this? And moving forward. And so, I'm glad it's happening, but we're also like more than a month away. Yeah. So it's not super close. And also, Bills have not announced that they're releasing it yet on the 28th. So we will see on that. Some other news, if you missed it last night, Christian Wilkins, no longer a Las Vegas Raider. This is a story that could get real interesting, mainly just due to the fact of everything else going on with the NFL Players Association. If you missed it, defensive tackle for the Raiders, Christian Wilkins, released yesterday, and it was designated as a terminated vested veteran. This kind of all comes from the fact that he's been recovering from a Jones fracture, which I believe is a fracture in his left foot. And there was arguments between the player and the team of how to actually go about the recovery. Williams didn't want to have another surgery. He was going to different avenues to avoid that. The Raiders wanted to have him get surgery. And now, because he won't get it, the Raiders are voiding the remaining $35.2 million of guaranteed money left on his contract. That was all the way back in June 4th. He had about 50 days to register a grievance with the NFLPA had to file a grievance. He had 50 days to ask them to do
they
that.
They had they other things going on.
Yes, they did eventually do it. It is interesting, though. He is, I think, a very underrated player. He had a ton of money from the Raiders. He has gotten a lot of money from the Raiders, but it really was the last 2 years he was going to get another good chunk of it. But already today, Patriots head coach Mike Vrabel, when asked about it, did say they were going to have a conversation about the Massachusetts local in Wilkins. And he was a bit of a – he was kind of the only guy on the Dolphins defense the last 5 years or so when he was with them that caused any sort of problem. Whether it was to some dirty tricks or not, he was kind of the only guy in that Dolphins defense that had any sort of bite to him.
And any sort of impact, really.
And he did seem to drive Josh Allen crazy.
And it's just now, a couple years ago that like the NFL players voted him as a top 100 type player.
Yeah, and now, you know, and again, he still has to get healthy. That's a big part of this too. He is not healthy yet, but potentially.
Hate that for a Bills fan.
You know, 2 years after he leaves Miami, he's going to be back in the division with the ascending team potentially. And we talk a little bit about the AFC East, but it has become somewhat difficult because none of the teams really are on the same path. It's kind of felt like Miami had their moment in the sun, but we kind of saw how much of a paper tiger they could be. As I mentioned there, Wilkins was kind of the only guy that had bite on that roster. I mean, his last year in Miami, by the way, he had 9 sacks at defensive tackle position. But he was kind of the only guy that really had that edge, and they lost him. I mean, this is a team that really, you know, in kind of the worst way, seemed to play soft as the year went on. The elements weren't really in their favor. It didn't go well.
Mm-hmm.
But if he could get healthy and go to a team like New England, it's not that it makes New England immediately more of a threat. It is just an interesting pickup of like, ooh.
They do become
that defense is good because you got Gonzalez at corner. I like Christian Barmore. We'll see about him also getting healthy. But they've got some pieces there on the defense where you're sitting there going, okay. Like, they might be a little bit far away on the offense. We'll see about their wide receiver unit. Kyle Williams, I know a lot of people are excited about. I even saw at Patriots camp that the first day or so, he looked very nice, and that's kind of a guy to keep an eye on because I know Bills fans were a big fan of his out of Washington State. But they seem to be a bit far away in the offense. But they get the defense underway with Vrabel. Vrabel was going to get in the one seed with Ryan Tannehill and his GM absolutely sabotaging the team, trading away A.J. Brown and stuff like that. I mean, he was still winning games. It didn't go perfect to the end. But if you get a defense around Vrabel, that feels like one of the better ways for him to win early.
To win early, I agree. I would agree with that. I do think that he does have his flaws as a coach. Otherwise, he would still have been the coach.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, when it comes down to it with Wilkins, the Patriots become a little bit more annoying, if that's the case. They become a little bit more of a thorn in the side, probably a little harder to put away for the Bills this year.
Mm-hmm.
If he's healthy and he joins the Patriots, of course. Like, both of these things have to happen. Am I overly concerned if that's to be the case? No. Do the Bills have a chance to do the funniest thing ever? Yes, but you don't have the room for him. Quite frankly, you don't have the room for him. If they were still looking for another D-tackle addition, absolutely.
I think they're supposed to be banging the drum, yeah.
You'd have the chance to do the funniest thing ever. God, the training camp fights would be unreal.
My thing would be I'd be pushing, like, I need to now see a Josh Allen, Christian Wilkins joint press conference.
I
need to see that.
But
you're right. They don't really have a need at defensive tackle with all the additions they made. They kind of just flat out, as you said, like, don't really have a spot.
Yeah. If Ogunjobi wasn't on this roster, then I'd say sure.
Mm-hmm.
But he is. Like, yeah, he's serving a suspension. Blah, 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 blah. Who cares?
But he's coming back after week six.
He comes back. And they expect him to be back and ready. So you don't have the room. And that's okay. It means you're in a good place. Honestly, if I say so myself, I need the pads. I need the pads so bad.
Because for me, that's where their big additions were on the defensive line, and that's where you want to see how they're looking. And then we've also heard from both Joe Brady and now Bobby Babbage today as well, earlier in the morning, a lot of what they're going to look at is, once the pads go on. You know, Brady really wanted to hammer home that, you know, you're not going to see the best of Keon Coleman against air. You know, once the hand fighting begins, once, you know, guys are able to get physical with the pads on, you'll see the development of Keon Coleman. He, by the way,
the timing on that is kind of hilarious because he talked yesterday and Coleman had a great
He ended up having a very good day from all reports. But
Keon Coleman's like, oh, yeah, watch this.
But even still, it's just, you know, he's talked about him. He even said it maybe more highly than other people are thinking just based off the questions he's getting. But then you go over to Bobby Babbage, who spoke today. And I don't necessarily know if he brought up, you know, pads and stuff like that, and then they'll see guys. But, you know, some of the younger guys like TJ Sanders and his physical abilities, you really won't get the most of that until pads are on. Deion Walker and his size and potentially him slimming down to maybe play at a better weight, you really won't get the full effects of that until pads are on. So it's a little annoying, but it is what it is. You know, I'd rather everyone stay healthy than we get there, but we're also kind of having issues there.
Yeah, there's already some...
That's honestly one of my fears now. It's just, like, all right, we're picking little injuries. No one seems that worried, but, man, pads are not even on, and we're already having some issues here.
Honestly, it kind of makes sense, though. It's movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, players are just getting back to the full swing of things. Like, you can do all the training you want on your own. You're not doing it with live action or live speed,
right,
with the intensity of your peers the way that you would in training camp,
mm-hmm,
even without the pads on.
Yeah.
Like, the movements are going to be faster.
Oh, absolutely.
From everybody. Because they're all pros. Not all pros, but they're all professionals.
There you go.
There is one all-pro on the team. It's still going to be a different intensity that you have to match. Every snap, every rep, pads on, no pads on.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's going to be some people that just like, muscle just like, I don't like what you just did. We're going to take a couple days. It's a human body. It's normal. It's inconvenient in a sense. Like, mm-hmm, you know, if you're cheering for the team and you see the team already racking up a couple injuries before pads even go on.
Yeah.
But it could be worse.
I mean, it could
be. The Jets avoided a major issue, but, like, we got no cart story yet.
True. Very true.
due diligence, guys and gals. Don't worry. So, yeah, like, we haven't had anything like that yet, and I said it again, just that I had to knock on more wood. Good for me. But I'm not too concerned yet.
No, I mean, it's day three. It's just, for me, it's more, the vibes felt good going into camp because everything had gotten handled, right?
You know, right.
Cook had reported, you got that, and even if he held in, it was like, hey, but he's still here. Like, it's not the drama that you're seeing in Cincinnati or Washington. The second round pick kind of conundrum sort of solved itself. Guys were getting much more money. There was some fully guaranteed contract, stuff like that. Sanders is in the building. You know, even the Landon Jackson stuff. He initially was going to start camp on PUP, but he's cleared, or even at MafiaCon, he's interviewed and mentions like, yeah, I'm going to be ready to go. So even before the official announcement came on, you know, from the guy himself, he's saying he's good. Everything seemed to be pushing in the right direction, including guys like even Joey Bosa as well. And then just the first 3 days, you're like, oh, all right, not 100% perfect. It's not going to be. But you always want to start at 100% and then go from there. And that's kind of my thing. Again, though, I do want to mention, too, with the Patriots and Wilkins, it's just I do look at them a lot because I see the Dolphins as sort of a team that's not, you know, on a free fall, but it feels like this year is going to be kind of a descent into this was their window. It wasn't even a particularly great window. They're going to be starting over here pretty soon with Greer and likely McDaniel fired. The Jets are completely starting over. I like Aaron Glenn, but that could go up in smoke as well. He's got to figure out the quarterback there. Next year, there's a lot going on. With the Patriots, I think they've already got their quarterback in Drake May. Now for them, it's, okay, you got more of an adult in the room in Vrabel. I think he has limitations as a head coach, but he, again, did do pretty well with Tennessee at times with sort of limited quarterback talent. I think Drake May will end up being better in his prime than anything that Ryan Tannehill was, even in his, you know, brief window there with Arthur Smith and how good he was. And adding a guy like a Christian Wilkins, going up, you know, next to Christian Barmore, Joshua Farmer. They've got some good guys. They paid a lot of money to Milton Williams as well.
That's right.
Kind of a Super Bowl hero for Philadelphia. They've added to that defensive line. If they could add a guy like Wilkins even before he's healthy, I think there is something to that. Of they're sort of that, like, that is fully following the Philly plan, including adding one of their players. Then you have Christian Gonzalez, who was absolutely voted as one of the top 10 corners in the league. He was a second-team All-Pro last year. He's very, very good. He was great in his rookie year, by the way. He just got hurt, and then second year he was awesome. I don't know. I start to look at the Patriots, and I go, it's a single move. It won't take them over the hump, but it absolutely makes them more interesting. And there was a call yesterday with Shope on the Bulldog where it's not necessarily you're worried that they would take the division.
Correct.
That a Patriots team or a Dolphins team or a Jets team would take the division. But that they might be good enough to screw up your plans for the one seed. That instead of going 5-1 or even 6-0 if you really needed it and you play the Stars against the Jets in Week 18, but that you go 4-2 or that you even go 3-3 because some of the teams are just good enough and in the road games, and it can be a little bit, obviously, more of a struggle on the road.
You know what would be even the most interesting piece of all of this?
Hmm.
Say the Patriots sign Christian Wilkins.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know their first two opponents?
The Patriots?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It is the Raiders and the Dolphins. Quite okay, literally well, in order.
Okay, well, now for the story. I actually kind of want that.
Yeah, right?
803-0550, the number to call. Patriots, Dolphins, Jets, do any of the teams in the AFC worry you? Maybe not even just for the division, but potentially being just good enough to maybe steal a game, cause some problems for the Bills in the hunt for the one seed. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer here with you on a Friday on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Would you welcome a return there, or has...
Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all got to stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break. And best to you.
That run its course.
Listen, I'm open to whatever I feel like is the best option. If Buffalo is that best option, obviously, you know, I will take it. That's definitely something that I will do. I know the system very well. I know the guys very well. And I feel like I can contribute big there like I have in the past. So, you know, Buffalo's definitely definitely could be a team that I end up being on. You know, we'll see. I don't know.
That is former Bills wide receiver Gabe Davis yesterday with Kay Adams. We just mentioned it, too, talking about Christian Wilkins. The Bills kind of don't have a spot for another defensive tackle. They've made a lot of additions. The same can be said at wide receiver. There's kind of just no room for Gabe Davis. And I said it before, Derek, and I'll say it again here. I am almost never really comfortable going back to the well. I like when the team evolves and keeps going forward. When guys leave, I'm cool with some coming back. But
like
even with
Tre'Davious White?
Well, but even with Trey White, if they didn't draft a corner around one, I would be irritated.
Yes, because then that's the plan.
That's the plan. And sometimes I think too often, I even mentioned it this weekend at MafiaCon with Alex Brasky too. I don't always love it because there's always going to be that feeling of go back to what you know. It was the same with Micah Hyde last year. Hyde, for almost verbatim, said he kind of wasn't going to play unless, like, something drastic happened.
Unless calamity happened.
And yet, and again, it's a segment of fans, it's not everybody, but I'm here, you know, taking phone calls for a few hours, and it was regular hearing, why isn't Hyde playing? Why isn't Hyde playing? I don't want that because you're not moving forward. You're not progressing as a franchise, as a football team. I want Bishop to be better. Not that Micah Hyde or Joy Poyer, like, overall. That'd be great, but I'm not demanding it. But I want us to get to a point where we're not going back to the past, going, we'll give them a call. Like, the worst thing in my mind would be we're week 4 or 5 in, Gabe Davis still doesn't have a team, and no offense to him, but the passing game isn't working, so we're banging the drum of, we'll give Gabe Davis a call. That, to me, is a disaster. Because there's a reason they're not on the team anymore. There is, yes, a reason. And there's ultimately, sadly, there's a reason he's not on the Jags anymore.
Correct.
It's 50-50 in terms of, you know, he has a new coach that kind of really didn't seem to know that he was on the team, Liam Cohen, because he was mentioning all their receivers and had like 10 names and just missed Gabe Davis, who's still on the roster. So yep. It's not unsurprising he's not there. But also, you know, ultimately the big point here is I hope Davis finds a job. He was never a bad guy when he was on the Bills. He had some great moments. I have his jersey at home, and I'm not a jersey guy. I got it after 13 seconds. I know it's my fault. I'm sorry.
I know it's my fault. I'm sorry. What a line.
But ultimately, you look at their roster, they kind of don't have the room. We're already talking about the guys right. They have now trying to find where targets could be, and we're having somewhat of a difficulty with it.
Or even more so than that. How's LaVisca Chenault making this team?
Yeah. Like, for him, it honestly, really might be. You have to be a return guy.
How's KJ Hamler making this team?
Mm-hmm.
He would need to be able to pop in some sort of way with the return game as well.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to it of, you have to find a way. Find a way to make it happen. And then, hey, here's Gabe Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Can Davis play special teams? He has in the past, I do believe. Don't quote me on it. I mean, you're a fourth-round rookie. Like, you'd probably want to be finding your way on a roster at any point.
Yeah, you would. We also do have news, as we were mentioning there, towards the end of our first segment. Bunch of teams that were part of the rivalry series this year, 7 of 8, actually, were releasing their, you know, the nice little videos and even kind of throwing out there when the game would be. The Bills. Finally get a part of it. We've got both of their tweets and kind of everything a part of that. It is going to be, it seems like, kind of a winter sort of vibe with the jersey. I'd imagine it might even be a whiteout jersey, and I just got to see the end of this video to make sure I get the date right, because we do have when it's going to be, and it is going to be October 5th against the Patriots, 8:20 p.m.
I like the glacial color, but I also want to see what the whole uniform looks like. Because you're probably, obviously, you're just using your white helmet, right?
Yeah.
You have to.
Or it might be a full-on whiteout logo and everything,
like the Vikings.
Yep.
The Vikings did that with their whiteout, where even the Viking horns were kind of white over.
Mm-hmm. But wouldn't that be an additional helmet, quote unquote, though?
Oh yeah, I think that's the thing. They're going to get an additional helmet. I think that's the big
part.
They're
probably awarded that for just like having to take part in this.
And I think the anticipation is, cuz right, like these rival jerseys go on for the next like 3 years. I think the anticipation is one of the either Standing Buffalo or the 90s is not going to continue on into the following years. I would say the 90s is not going to be continuing on past week 18. I think they're going to go back to pulling out the Standing Buffalo every now and then, because that has stopped in recent years, and I have missed it. So it seems like we're moving towards that direction, where then they'll have this jersey to help out as well and have, you know, a few more mixes. I will also say, in their video that Josh Allen is in, they, of course, pull out the unsurprising quote when talking about Buffalo or Minnesota or Green Bay: winter is coming, taken from Game of Thrones. And it does appear to be very White Walker inspired. You have Allen's eyes go to that crystal blue that was big in the TV show.
I would really like to see what this whole uniform looks like. I'm genuinely curious.
We're going to the Fortress of Solitude. That's what it looks like, all the crystals.
Oh, man.
Right?
It's also Game of Thrones. There was like a Fortress of Solitude there too. If we do get a White Walker type uniform, I will lose it. I will lose
they
my
They have
mind.
My money.
Yeah,
banging the table.
That's
got my
thing.
Money.
As I mentioned there, I'm not really a jersey guy. I'm just not. I'd have not anxiety, but I am superstitious about it. I haven't really bought like any specialty jerseys. I know a ton of people that like the Bills red ones. I'm not one of them. It depending on how this goes, I might do it. See, I might do it.
I'm not superstitious. I'm a little stitious. So I will put together some jersey collections. Like, I do have the navy blue one.
There we go.
Yep.
I do have like a bunch of different, the red ones, all of that. So this is going in my collection, absolutely.
Yeah, it's going to be a unique thing. But again, just how do you pull the whole thing off for me? It's not just how a jersey looks. It has to be the kit. I need to see what everything looks like here. And I do like the idea of the frost-colored logo that they have for the rivalries.
Mm-hmm. And so with that, the Bills will be introducing these. We will see what they look like at the end of August, August 28th. And then it'll be early. It'll be Week 5 Sunday Night Football at home against the Patriots is when they will actually debut them. So I think a lot like Miami, I think, is also doing these fairly early.
Yep.
I kind of like that. Let's not make us wait like the whole time. But again, like that goes to the point too. They're going to be wearing different uniforms.
We waited
a lot.
4 months for this when they actually unleashed the entirety of the uniforms.
But here, they're going to wear the rivalry jerseys at home against Patriots. The next week against Atlanta, they're wearing their throwbacks in Atlanta. It's going to be a lot of different jerseys.
And I'm a fan of that.
Throughout the season. I'm a fan. I want to see how this looks first. I want to see. I'm excited at the concept. We all know I'm a big Game of Thrones guy. They're pulling out the White Walker stops. I'm all for that. If they could get any of the former actors from the original show to like debut, that'd be even cooler. But I want to see how it looks first, because if it looks bad, I mean, like here, how do we honestly feel that Steelers fans and Green Bay fans are about their like 1940s jerseys? The Steelers ones are horrific.
Oh my God, those are
bad. At least the Green Bay one was like, oh, we're gonna like use like new like helmet technology to like make it look like the leather cap again. But like they don't look
particularly
look good.
Good.
Yeah, and so like that's my fear is like, yeah, we're gonna have a lot of them, and you're gonna like about two of them. And that's my only thing.
To be fair, though,
you know, that's where I've pushed with the uniforms. I like the quality over quantity. I've liked it. They haven't had a ton, but I've loved them.
What I will say though is, doesn't that happen a lot with like new uniforms though too, where it's just like, I don't know, man. Like the Cleveland Browns. Nah, you ain't tricking me. That's like FCS Northwest in college football.
Right.
Like that's not a real team.
Even Oregon kind of had to like earn the whole we're pulling out all the stops, because I mean for years like they were just the neon green and yellow. Like that's what they were. They had to like, sort of earn it.
I also do hate the overuse of like the all black uniform, with a team that does not have a primary black color to it. Like, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the same thing with the all white. It's a lazy gimmick, I think. The Bills, it's not an all white look for any of theirs. Like, yeah, it's the white helmet, jersey, pants, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But the logo's still prevalent. The numbers are still the numbers. It's like, when you have it, just like the numbers are only outlined,
mm-hmm.
and they're white on the inside too, and it's like, come on, Can we do something a little better than this?
Yeah.
And it's pretty much the same thing, in the same standing. This is different. There's a frost color to it. I'm not going to ignore that. That's interesting.
They could do something with like that, like it's white, but then they have the lighter blues, like, you know, the ice color blue that
we all kind of know. And this is going to be the
could do something like
but
that.
But this is the Sunday night game, the NBC game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hmm.
It looks like everyone's doing it like in like a pretty good window from the dates I've seen. I don't have all the dates or anything also, like that, but it seems like everyone's doing it like during
New England's hinting game. At a white jersey, though, are they not?
They're doing it against a different team.
Oh.
Theirs is against, I believe, the Jets. I want to make sure on that, but I believe they're doing it against somebody else. No, yeah, I don't think anyone's clashing. So it's not what we initially thought, where it was going to be rival jerseys going up against each other. It looks like everyone's doing it kind of alone against a division rival.
I'm confused.
What? I believe that's how it's going, is like everyone's doing it against a rival, yes, but everyone's going to have a solo spot with it.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, it appears that is what's going on, is that everyone's kind of doing it
that makes
somewhat solo.
No sense.
See, but this kind of didn't go like where I thought it would be anyways. Because initially, I did think it would be more along the lines of like an homage to an earlier era of the team. And then they would clash together. Now it is just entirely like a different design, a true its own thing.
It's like a city design almost.
Yeah, yeah, I think city design is probably the right way to do it. Like something like the NBA has done for years as well. Any Miami jersey is Miami Vice. I'd imagine the Dolphins is going to be like that as well. And you just you debut it against a rival rather than both get the spotlight on one day, one night. I don't hate that.
I do.
Well, the reason I don't hate it is because—
What, are we going to get the Dolphins unleashing theirs against the Bills unleashing theirs against the Patriots unleashing theirs against the Jets unleashing theirs against the Dolphins?
Well, actually, I believe everyone but the Bills is releasing theirs against the Jets.
No.
I think Miami and New England are the Jets. And then the Jets is against
Miami.
Dolphins.
I don't see Miami's unleashed or like revealed like what day it's actually coming. Like what?
Give me 1 second. I got to find it because like they've got multiple posts for this. But yeah, I'm fine with it. If the jersey looks good, I'm fine with it because it's not
like
initially
it.
What I thought it was.
I don't like it. If you're going to do a gimmick like that, do it against each other. Show what kind of thing you've got. And then that's it.
Well, the thing, it's not going to be it. This is now a jersey for you for the next 3 or so years. So
then play them against each other for it.
Well,
but then it
quickly is just a gimmick of we're only going to wear this against this team or one of these teams and we have to wear them together. That's not fun. That's ridiculous. So now that it's not just going to be an homage to the 90s or 60s or one of your eras, and if it's going to be its own thing, yeah, we're going to unveil it against a rival. But then it's part of our wardrobe. That we can just kind of pull out against maybe anybody going into the future. We'll unveil it first against a division opponent, but then it's just part of it.
But it's a rivalries uniform. That's going to be the name for it. Like how there's the Color Rush uniform.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rivalries uniform. Why would you wear it against, say, next year, I don't know, like hypothetical opponent here, Kansas City?
You're probably going to wear it for the next 3 years against a different divisional opponent.
You're probably wearing it against each one of them.
Yes, but they will not be wearing theirs while playing you.
But then if you're already having to wear the jersey against them no matter what, why not have them wear it against you?
I think from what I'm gathering from it, if it's an all-white kit, it's an away jersey, right?
Like yes.
No, well, this, but yeah, but they're at home.
Right.
The Bills are going to be at home for this.
So the Dolphins will be wearing, or who? The Patriots, right? Is it week four, you said?
It's week five.
Week five.
Yeah, they
week
are
five
home.
Sunday
yes.
football at
they
home
at
against
home.
Patriots.
So the Patriots will be wearing probably their navy blue jerseys at that point, I would assume, to contrast it. So I get it, because if the Patriots are going white too, that's not going to work. You can't both wear that. So you got to kind of go home team, let the jersey out against a divisional opponent, and that's that.
Again, I don't know. I feel like if you're going to do the thing, wearing them against a rival, I feel like they should be wearing them against each other. That's just me.
Yeah, but then you are getting to a point of like, cool, you guys have to do a blue one, or you guys have to do a red one or green one, because you're going to be the first year playing another team that wants to do a road one or a white one. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of it, is too, is like everyone gets to do whatever you want, And then they'll show up, you know, wherever, you know, at home.
And then you're going to wear them for one of three games.
Maybe.
Because you're on the road or at home.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I feel like that's a weird gimmick.
I mean, they're all weird gimmicks until they're not. But we'll see. They're playing them against the Patriots Sunday Night Football Week 5, so we'll be early, and we're going to be getting a lot of different jerseys as we go. 803-0550, the number two call. What are you hoping to see from these jerseys? Day 3 of Bills training camp continues on down at St. John Fisher. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Quick final segment here as we wrap up hour number one of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Day number three of Bills training camp going on over at St. John Fisher University. And that coverage is brought to you by Fiegel Carr & Joyce, your border attorneys. Buy Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors & Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. We've got some movies coming out, both I think yesterday and now today. I'm going to see one of them twice tomorrow. Joe, I know you're going to see Fantastic Four tonight.
But you know what I'm seeing before Fantastic Four?
Oh, no.
Happy Gilmore 2 on my TV at home.
Is that what you're doing like right when you get home now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yep, no question. I might nap like,
okay.
in between.
That's probably good.
But, yeah, I'm excited about Happy Gilmore 2. I might be in the minority. But
Happy Gilmore 2 came out today on Netflix 3 a.m. today on the East Coast is what I heard.
They waited for the West Coast. They were polite, so...
Ridiculous. Whatever. We always get burned in that, don't we?
I'm far more excited to watch the Hall of Fame game than Happy Gilmore 2.
Oh, man. See,
this isn't happening on a Friday.
This is not happening.
Oh, so save it for tomorrow. Okay.
Yes.
Yes, he says. Hey, you heard it. It's on record now.
But yeah, so Fantastic Four, I think, came out yesterday or it officially comes out today. I'm seeing it twice. Because I screwed up.
Hell yeah.
I have maybe overbooked myself. So I typically see a lot of like the Marvel DC movies. I have for years, even going back before the pandemic. I go with my dad, my cousin, and his partner, and we go.
Right.
And it's been the four of us for, I think, honestly, since like 2018. We've gone to like all the big ones. So we've kept it going. And so when Fantastic Four was coming out, we're like, all right, we're going to go see that. And I screwed up initially, too. I didn't go see Superman with them. It's the first one I missed in a while because I went with my girlfriend. Well,
okay, also fair though.
Well, my dad was like, all right, hey, well, then we're setting up Fantastic Four. I'm like, got it. Cool. What are we doing? And I let them all set it up. My
did
girlfriend
they,
then.
Did they forget somebody?
No. Well, they didn't. I did. So then later, like 2-3 weeks later, my girlfriend's like, hey, like, we saw Superman. We got to see Fantastic Four. I'm like, you're absolutely right. When do you want to go? Like, I'm free on the weekends. Like an idiot. I buy the tickets, book it, the whole thing. I have the realization on a car ride home, and I'm like, oh, I think I'm double booked. So I text my dad. I'm like, when are we going? Noon tomorrow. Crap. I'm going at 6 tomorrow, too. So I'm gonna see the movie tomorrow at noon, get out around 3.
Why?
And then I'm going to rush over to Orchard Park, probably get a quick bite to eat, watch it again. I really hope it's good. I really hope it's good.
Why would you make this public?
Because I've done stuff like that before.
Have you told her that this is what happened?
100%. She made fun of me. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
This is not something I don't do regularly. this is absolutely not a new phenomenon.
Okay.
In my life,
like I don't know if you're the kind of person that you would need to like hide that you already saw it and be like, oh wow, geez, that happened. What?
No. No. She looked me dead in the face and just laughed.
Good.
And I was like, all right, I mean, we got
to
get through it.
Which is exactly what I'm doing to you right now.
We got
to
get through it.
Right at you and laughing at you.
We're gonna see what happens. I'm sitting here and I'm like, I really hope it's good. Because if I don't, like, I probably won't hate it. But in the event I do, that's a tough way to spend a Saturday. Is watching a movie twice that you can't stand.
That would actually be funnier.
Mm-hmm.
But I doubt that happens.
I agree. Very much doubt that happens.
I think that it's going to be good. I hope that for your sake it is good. But at the same time, for your sake, I also hope that it's bad.
Imagine you have to sit through a burner two times.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I just, oh man.
I mean, it is going to be good. The general reviews have already.
I know. Quite so a bit. I feel good, and that's where I'm like, I'm not as nervous, but I am sitting here going like, that could be a tough way to spend a Saturday.
The chaos goblin in me, and I think Joe would agree with this, is I kind of like. There's only like a small portion of me that hopes it's bad, just so that you have to go through it twice because you goofed.
I'll be honest too. It's been a little while since I've seen a movie I didn't like.
It's a good point.
They've been kind of bangers lately.
It's been a bit. I was thinking about this last night. I watched part one of that Billy Joel documentary.
I did too.
On HBO.
It's phenomenal.
It's part two comes out tonight, I think, at 8 on HBO.
July 25th. It's the day. It is the day.
Yes. If you haven't watched it, if you got HBO, if you got 2.5 hours, by the way, it is a long one. I cannot recommend it enough. But like, I've been hitting him out of the park recently. I have not picked a bad time for myself lately and like watching something. And I'm terrified when the other shoe's going to drop. And it would be something like this where I've double booked myself.
Yes.
And I've got to see, like, this would be this the time.
This is not the movie it's going to happen,
mm-hmm.
but it is going to catch up to you one day.
It will.
And I can't wait for that text.
It's going to be tough. 803-0550, the number to call. If you did miss it, the Bills rivalry jerseys, they have not been unveiled. No, but we did get the announcement of when that'll be happening, August 28th, and they'll be wearing them on Sunday Night Football, Week 5, against the New England Patriots. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
I didn't really think about it. I knew I was going to come out here and work. I don't owe it to nobody but my...
Hey, it's Ryan Green from the Commercial Break Comedy Podcast. We've been described as unscripted, unqualified, and unapologetic. And that came from my mother. See if you agree. The Commercial Break is available Tuesday through Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
My teammates and myself and my family. So by me participating, showing my teammates that I love the game and I'm willing to be out here.
Bills running back James Cook. No hold in, no hold out, practicing in full. And he was very candid yesterday in his appearance to the media there. You heard it there and just in that clip, you know, really holding in was never an option. Holding out was never an option. He also, though, did mention that, you know, he wants to get paid. He thinks he will get paid, whether it be in Buffalo or whether it be somewhere else. And I'm a very big fan of athletes being candid. I've talked about that with Scottie Scheffler, different circumstances, but him being very open about how he feels about like his legacy with golf, and mm-hmm. he doesn't, you know, identify himself as a golfer. It's just a thing he does that makes him money. I like that Cook is being very candid. And now I think you can comfortably, whenever Cook speaks, whenever he says something, you can kind of take him at his word. And that's not always true with athletes. That's not always true with public figures. You know, there is that sort of PR training that one has to go through when you get put into the public spotlight. But Cook, I think, actually, you know, for as little we hear him speak, really balances it well. He doesn't give you too much to where you're going, maybe wouldn't have done that, wouldn't have said that. But he doesn't give you so little or give you the same cookie cutter answers that you'd expect that make you go, I'm not going to listen to that. I don't really care. I'm not going to learn anything. I think you learned a lot listening. I think he only spoke for about 5.5 minutes. I think you learned quite a bit about where James Cook's mindset is at.
Yes. And again, it is a consistent message. He wants to get paid. He feels like he's worth a certain amount.
Mm-hmm.
And that message has been there. It has been clear. You and I have talked about this week of how admirable it has been that he has shown the team route despite, you know, his desires. But he has been consistent with that messaging too of, I do want to get paid. Be it here or elsewhere, that's what I would want. I would like to be in Buffalo, the quarterback, the team, everything like that, the roster, like everything does jive pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But if he gets that contract elsewhere, if the Bills cannot afford to keep him, which also Brandon Bean mentions a little bit of this week at the start of training camp.
Yep.
And it's something that I'd imagine in closed doors has been kind of the message. I don't know if we can afford it.
Yeah, we'd love to keep you here, man. We really would. Just don't know if we're going to be able to do it. But you deserve to get your bag. And I think as well, too, there might be a positive to this of like, it's also a position, you know, in a way that may not hurt the team going to the draft in like the second or third round.
And it is also an amicable.
Especially when you've helped out the offensive line so much.
And it's also an amicable ending,
mm-hmm.
kind of. Like, you under, like, it seems like both sides have come to this understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we aren't in the negotiations. We don't know. But based off the situation, the fact that a contract is not done kind of effectively tells you the story, if you're able to read the tea leaves on this,
mm-hmm.
that it seems like both player and team have this understanding. And all you want to do is get through the season. Both of you benefit from another good season from Cook.
Mm-hmm.
And then, however, the dice roll from there is where they roll.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. Some notes from practice today. I'm seeing this from Alex Brasky, friend of the show. Offense seems to be actually having a very good day. Josh Allen in particular having a very good day, finding Coleman over the middle. He's had some nice hits to Dalton Kincaid, Josh Palmer, and Elijah Moore. Although his two misses, two interceptions, come from the same player, Taylor Rapp. Having himself a very nice day, which could be big. I mean, it does sound like it has been Cole Bishop and Taylor Rapp as the two starting safeties. If you can get a really good season out of Rapp, especially if he's maybe more in the – and, you know, Derek, you mentioned this, maybe more into his natural role.
Yes, and I also – maybe, though, maybe good it's spot. – maybe he also might be the player that we all assumed that they could see him as
mm-hmm.
when he initially signed
yeah.
from the Rams. He was seen almost as like this heir apparent, so to say, from Hayden Poyer.
Yeah, he took like a smaller deal just to get in the building, and then it was like, okay.
Okay, you're going to be our...
Once the year's done, he's coming.
You're going to be one of our guys going forward here. And he was not necessarily known as a pure thumper.
Mm-hmm.
He showed that when he got here. But I do think, yeah, he does make plays from time to time. I just would love to see him not... hit somebody so hard that it takes himself out of the lineup. Like, that's all I need to see.
Yeah.
And if he is the guy that plays up top, for example, like I was speculating yesterday, maybe Cole Bishop is the guy that, you know, is the range type and then you can put Rapp in the box. Maybe it is the opposite.
Maybe. We'll see. I think they're going to have a fun year on defense just with the additions they've made on the defensive line and in the secondary. And I do mean that. I think they could have a really fun year. I'm excited to see what Bobby Babbage can do in year two as a defensive coordinator. Now with more, I would just say, straight up help on the defensive side of the ball. I think that there were really at times last year, maybe more often than not, they ran into a talent issue on defense. They just did not have the guys to play defense the way they wanted to. With that being said, though, Sean McDermott defenses will take the ball away. And that really helped them in a lot of areas. They were not a great run-stopping defense. They were not a great third-down defense. But they were able to sustain themselves off of, yeah, but we're going to take the ball away. And I think Bobby Babbage today was wearing a hat that said take the ball or get the ball, whatever it was. And so it's kind of going off of the saying for the offense of everybody eats. You know, the defense kind of has their own. But now with the additions on the defensive line, it also sounds like Greg Rousseau and Joey Bosa are having a great day. And Babbage, I think, even mentioned outright that Bosa is a three-down player. They're just going to more kind of play with his reps and how they're going to do that. That'll be interesting to see.
Maybe it's a drive-by-drive situation.
Right, exactly. And so I said a lot the last few weeks. If they can get immediate good, not great, but good play out of guys like TJ Sanders and Max Harrison, or if Trey White really is a really good solid CB2 and they can kind of bring Harrison along a little bit slower, they could have a lot of fun on defense this year. I think there's been a lot of times in the past few years the defense has not had the talent that you'd maybe want, and we haven't really gotten to see McDermott maybe flex his defensive muscles as much. But even with some limited talent, some injuries, they still get turnovers. They're still a good enough unit. They do fall apart in the playoffs. That is not an aberration. That is a normality for them at more often than not. But if you can have talent that is healthy at the end of the year, and that's where I bring up the one seed a lot, I would like to see, like, does McDermott maybe have a Spags-type, you know, playbook in his head that he can just pull up and you know, kind of unleash the dogs a little bit. It is a lot of times in the playoffs has felt like they can't.
The other thing about it is that turnovers are not supposed to be something you can like rely on a year-to-year basis. But what do the Bills do almost every year?
Yeah, they kind of rely on them.
It's not even rely on them. They get them.
Yeah, it just works. They're
it just
fine.
Happens. It keeps happening, which might say something a little bit against the grain of what you're trying to say about like they do lack that pure talent sort of thing. I think, though, that it turns into the depth And last year, we did have a little bit more depth to the Bills' defense. We saw it. It's just, it wasn't enough. And there is a difference between having depth within your regular season and depth against, well, quite frankly, Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you look at this team and you go, turnovers are not supposed to be something you can replicate year in and year out. But the Bills seem to buck that trend, that saying, and really kind of turn around and say, we can do it. Because oftentimes, what are the Bills at the end of the day? They're a bend, don't break type defense. They'll let you get some chunkage in terms of yards, but then they lock it down in the situations that they need to the most. There's just one moment every year that it doesn't happen that way.
It's the playoff games they lose.
Painful. It is painful to see that that's how it goes. But it's not anything that, like, I don't know. Maybe you can go ahead and look at it. It is tight. It's kind of their identity. Get the turnovers. Cause a big play. Mm-hmm. Allow the offense to be able to dominate. And you turn a game into, well, not really much of a game anymore. Or you put it away in your favor.
Yeah.
It is fascinating that this Bills team, even with talent changing through, and it's not as strong as it used to be with the top end skill, how do you deal with that? How do you survive that? Well, you get some turnovers.
Well, and it's the great equalizer for them.
It's the great equalizer.
The problem
for them.
Is, though, that runs out in the playoffs.
And
Mahomes has never thrown a pick against them in the playoffs.
And if you have one game where you don't get those turnovers, it becomes devastating for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you live by the sword. Hey, here comes the die by the sword part.
And that's where I get excited about the additions to the defensive line. I do like seeing that Rousseau and Bosa are eating today, or that Rapp is kind of all around. Bishop looks more comfortable, that kind of stuff. Because then if you have the natural talent plus the addition of those turnovers, then you should be fine. I mean, like, I say it a lot now, but if their defense is better, if their defensive line is better than last year, they're a Super Bowl team. Maybe not Super Bowl winning. We'll see what comes out of the NFC, because we saw what Philadelphia looked like by the end of the year. But they should make it to the Super Bowl. All they need is like three or four plays across an entire game against Mahomes, and they win. The problem is against that team in particular in the playoffs, they get none of those plays. The Chiefs offense couldn't score 30 points all year. But in that one game, because they're awful against the Eagles in 2 weeks at the Super Bowl. But against that team in particular, they pop off. No issues. Worthy's all over the place. And then Kelsey looks pretty good. And the run game's good. Everything worked for him.
Juju Smith-Schuster's randomly making plays.
On that day, it worked for him. And that just happens so often. And that's where, for me, this is also the second or even maybe third time they've had to really redo this defensive line. You hope now finally something has clicked, that Sanders comes in and hits. Rousseau takes that step forward. Ed Oliver finds some consistency. But we'll see. I'm excited, but it is tough for me to totally buy in, because we've been down this road before, and then there really isn't that pop play. Like, I like that they're going to promote a lot of these guys on Hard Knocks. I'm excited for that. The guys like Christian Benford are going to get their promotions, and they should. But there does have to be, not Chris Jones himself, but there's got to be a player that in those big moments steps up. You had that for a half a season with Von Miller when you first got him.
Correct.
He won you the Chiefs game at the end.
He won you the Chiefs game
at
the regular season.
He did exactly what you needed him to do in the regular season. He won it for you. And they just do not get that from anybody but their quarterback in those games. And that is what happened. Aaron Schatz had a stats. He was down with Mina Kimes from ESPN, through the Bills. It's them for the last 5 years, and the Ravens for the last 5 years. The best teams to not win a Super Bowl based off his stats.
And I think I saw it was like a top 10 like DVOA of teams that haven't won the Super Bowl, and it's like 4 year pockets. The Bills and Ravens are on there twice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we mentioned the turnover thing of like how it shouldn't be replicated. Like, it's not something that could be capable of being replicated. Zach, since 2020, they've been either third or fourth.
Yeah.
Their lowest point in terms of turnovers ranked across the league since Sean McDermott has been here, 10th in 2019. That's the worst that they've done at acquiring and taking away the football. It is getting to a point where, like,
this should not be something easily replicated. And the Bills go, yeah, so? And it, all it takes, though, and this is why the playoffs are a problem, it is one game. If you don't get them in one game, you're cooked. How do they beat Baltimore?
Well, I mean, straight up,
it is
Baltimore
turnovers.
Is a better team than them on paper, but on that day, they turned the ball over a lot.
They turned the ball over
then,
three times.
And even then, it still almost led to them losing. Baltimore turned the ball over a ton. I think, what, three or four times?
It was three times.
Three times. And it still came down to just a drop pass from that game going to overtime. And I said a lot last year that that team was kind of punching above its pay grade, but it kind of didn't matter. Like, just get to the end. You got the quarterback. You're fine. The turnovers were working. But that's, I mean, it's where it leads me to getting nervous is, yeah, because they got all the turnovers there. But if they didn't, Baltimore had no problem with the ball down the field on them. I mentioned it a lot that the Mark Andrews fumble is an easy first down.
And the 2023-24 season is where, like, they are banged up to oblivion. A.J. Klein obviously plays in that game in the divisional round against Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that is a team that they needed to be able to take the ball away. That was something like they had to rely on it because they were banged up. They were a team that was getting beaten down. They gave up a game-winning drive to the Patriots with Mac Jones dealing the football. Like, they were really beaten up. They had to be able to take the ball away. Otherwise, that defense would have been, throughout the entirety of the season, a problem child for them. They gave 470-plus yards to the Jacksonville Jaguars that year. Like, it's something where, yeah, they actually needed it that year because the health was a problem. Now, it's still the same thing. Can you, with some of these new additions, though, add a little bit more on the high end of talent for this team? Because if you have to rely on the turnovers, all it takes is one bad game, one efficient game from another team, from a top-end team in the postseason.
Which you will get.
Which you get with Kansas City. They may have been unspectacular last year on defense, on offense, but they don't turn the ball over. And eventually you will get beaten down in that point.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's go to the phones. George is up first today. George, how are we doing today?
Hey, good. I agree with what you're saying, but I'm going to be a little more specific in that. I think this shows up on the whiffs that the general manager has made in his with his first and second picks on defense.
Yeah, I think absolutely, George. I think that is absolutely correct to bring up because you look at it too. Like, Ed Oliver is a top 15 pick. He is simply not consistent enough. You need often for him to be at his best. A big guy next to him. Elam is a flat-out miss. And to the point where when he was traded this offseason, the fact that you got a seventh?
Any sort of pick for him.
Anything for him was a cause for celebration. I like Greg Rousseau, but he has not transformed into that 12.5, 13-sack guy, top 10 in every pass-rushing category. He is top 25 in most of them, but he was a first-round pick with elite physical traits, it appeared. He should do that. Epinesa is a second-round pick who, I mean, kind of has never become...
He's been a rotational guy.
He's been a rotational guy that flashes every now and then, but I can't say he's ever been that great.
He'll have a fun game or two.
Yeah, and so I agree with George's point. I mean, like, and I've been somewhat critical of Bean over the last few months, mainly on the defensive side. I brought it up. This is maybe the second or third iteration of transforming the defensive line again. But
yeah,
but it's the fact that they did it again. They're not just saying, screw it, let them score 35. We'll try to, you know, break records and score 40 because I hear that all the time. Like,
that's not sustainable.
Yeah, that's not sustainable either. But I like the additions they made. They add a corner in Max Harrison who has that elite trait physically that you don't often find at the end of round one with his speed. You've already seen it early in camp that is helping him make some mistakes, allow him to kind of learn on the fly a little bit. He can make up for it. TJ Sanders, that South Carolina defensive line was incredible last year. They put teams on their butts all the time. Sanders was a big part of that, and he was kind of the last defensive tackle of the of that class that had the pass rushing upside plus the run defense. You had Deion Walker, who if that back issue is situated and he has actually slimmed down to play faster, they may have gotten the second round kind of guy in the fourth round.
Like, look out. The guy has top-end talent to him.
But they've got to hit, and that's why I say it all the time. I want to keep the expectation somewhat leveled, but this is where, Bishop, you need to be a good safety. I'm not saying great, a good safety this year. Sanders, and Hairston need to be solid to good contributors this year. If not, we're going to be having the same conversation that we've had for the last few years of, yeah, they really don't have that guy on defense. Do we need to trade every first-round pick to go get a disgruntled Trey Hendrickson or hope that another pass rusher becomes available, even though none of them really did except for Hendrickson?
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, like those hopes all kind of evaporated. Garrett, we all thought around Super Bowl week, was never playing for Cleveland again.
Right.
And for most of the offseason, he's been paid by Cleveland. Max Crosby, the same thing. And that's the thing, too. You look at guys like Max Crosby. You can get elite pass rushers later in the draft. He's a fourth-round pick, and in year one, he had double-digit sacks for the then Oakland Raiders. So I also look at even guys like Javon Salmon. Does he maybe take a step forward, not to be, again, the 10 to 15 guy, but can he rack up 5-6 sacks? This team does not finish plays in terms of the defensive line all that often. They really don't. They can get in there, they don't finish the play.
But what saves them? It's the turnovers.
The turnovers. But if you can mesh the two, I say it all the time, they will go to the – their quarterback is too talented. They're solid enough on offense. They have a great offensive line. If you just get a top 15 defense that can finish plays, has a guy that can get in there, you're going to the Super Bowl.
You know, it's kind of
sick and
twisted.
But they have run into that wall.
It's sick and twisted. I've been looking at these turnover stats. Now that I thought about it, I went into a little bit of a deep dive on it. Like, I look up the rankings for them each of the years that Sean McDermott's been here. The lowest they ever got to was in 10th.
Mm-hmm.
Since 2020, they've been never lower than 4. Last year, they get a turnover in all but one game in the regular season.
Yeah.
The LA Rams game. Which the block punt effectively ends up being more crucial than you'd ever think.
Yep.
There's only one other game that they don't have a turnover, and that's Denver. Denver's the one game where they're just like they don't need it.
Yeah.
They're on a different class.
Denver scores early.
Here's the sickening part. They won the turnover battle against Kansas City, 1-0.
Mm-hmm.
And they still lost.
They still lost.
Like, oh, can we not deal with that? I am perfectly fine if they avoid Kansas City in the playoffs this year. Please, thank you, you're welcome. I probably speak for a lot of people at this point. Hello?
But, I'd be happy to avoid Kansas City. I'd be cool with it, but...
They're probably inevitable.
It's why I push for the one seed, though, so the divisional round isn't against somebody like Cincinnati, Baltimore, or Kansas City. You will get the worst remaining playoff team. That's great. But, yeah, when I look at teams like Kansas City, they have guys that finish games. Chris Jones helps them, yes, but their secondary has been great for them, and specifically great for them. They have been awesome when they leave. L'Jarius Sneed goes to Tennessee. He's not the same L'Jarius Sneed.
He's not the same player. They draft McDuffie.
Mm-hmm. They draft McDuffie.
Fills right in. Drew Tranquil does a lot for them at linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
So they have, it seems like, one on every level. The Bills seem like they have one on every level, except the front.
I think they have a guy that can do that in two of the three levels. But it may be the most important one that they don't. And that's why I get excited that you've added TJ Sanders. And you've added enough that maybe Ed Oliver and Greg Rousseau can have pop-off seasons. But to George's point, I mean, we've been there. We've been down this road before of early draft picks on defense, assuming they're going to play a big role, hoping they play a big role, and that kind of feeling falling flat on its face. 803-0550, the number to call. We've had our first scrimmage at Bills camp. We'll touch on that after we come back. You're listening to WGR.
Ed Oliver is a good player. Daquan Jones is a good player. They added Larry Ogunjobi. They did work. They said, look, we need to do work on this part of the team. Let's do work. It also will help pass the defensive line if Milano can actually stay healthy for a whole year, because he's very good if he can stay healthy. You hope that Bosa is a big improvement. Obviously, they want the defense to be better and less dependent on turnovers. And if the turnovers come, then that's it.
Friend of the show, Aaron Schatz there with Mina Kimes, talking the additions to the Bills' defense. It is the offense gets all the headlines, the wide receivers and such.
Yep.
Yes. But ultimately, the Bills' seasons, even with ultimately, Josh Allen having the ball at the end of the games to win the games kind of has come down to the defense.
You need to
and their inability to make stops. And, you know, looking back to Derek through their draft history, by the way, I haven't brought up rookie Landon Jackson, who was picked before right. Deion Walker. My apologies. But you look back, I mean, you didn't really get much of a contribution from Cole Bishop due to correct. Injuries and not being able to catch up. Dwayne Carter as well picked up a wrist injury. He seemed to be coming on for like two games. Didn't get much from him. Solomon's a fifth-round pick. You go then to 2023. Dorian Williams is a nice backup off the ball linebacker, maybe the future replacement for Matt Milano. He led the team in tackles, last year. That's good. Kyir Elam, a complete miss in round one. Complete miss. Bernard has been a hit, absolutely, and Benford's been a hit, absolutely. But then Rousseau, good, not great. Boogie Basham, not very good, and that was your second-round pick.
Matter of fact, dreadful.
Yeah, AJ Bonessa, simply not good enough. A good rotational player, but as a second-round pick, and your first pick of the 20 draft, you'd wanted more. And then maybe the player that, honestly, I am maybe the most frustrated at, because he was such an early pick, and the last early pick the Bills have had in the first round, at Oliver.
Also because of his early returns. He gets that contract extension because he earned it.
He earned it. And he had a 9-sack season.
He has shown that he can do it. But now it seems like, do you need assistance? Like, do you need someone next to you to help you unlock yourself again?
And in reality, when I pick a guy in the top 10, you should be the guy giving everyone assistance. You're the guy that makes everyone look better. Look at the Eagles. Their big disruptor was their early pick in Jalen Carter.
Yep.
Everyone else looks very good around him, but it's because Carter looks like he might be a future defensive player of the year at defensive tackle.
Right.
He looks unbelievable.
So it is tough. Like, I still believe in Ed Oliver. But now it is, I have to change that style of belief.
Yep.
And adding more to the position is, I wouldn't say it's an indictment on him, but it doesn't look great.
Mm-hmm.
I still think he should be a fantastic player. He has shown it. And quite honestly, in the Kansas City game, he's one of the few guys on defense I actually trusted.
Yeah, funny enough, the other guy you maybe should have trusted, and we've brought this up, Rousseau, maybe has his worst game as a pro. Just awful at setting the edge and kind of was less than a non-factor, but a genuine hindrance to them.
Yeah,
they really hurt them. Did mention before the break, we have our first scuffle at Bills camp, although it is kind of just between two guys, Alec Anderson and Hayden Harris. This is coming from Thad Brown. A couple of punches thrown, didn't last long, won't be a camp without Anderson getting involved in something after a play. That is sort of his job, right? Like as the sixth offensive lineman, you're kind of just there to cause problems for the defense. That's your whole job, and he does it so well.
It's so weird. Yeah, like, but it also makes so much sense for the player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he does have that nasty streak to him.
Yeah.
And offensive linemen in defensive linemen in particular, you are hitting each other every play. The first scuffle to break out typically should be in the trenches.
Oh, it absolutely should be.
Sometimes
they're probably
not.
The players more than anyone that go, I can't wait to hit anybody else. Anybody else.
Yes. Which is why those joint practices are oftentimes like they're a big deal, because it's like, oh my God, I could hit somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Because you're right. It's every single play. And then even without pads.
Like, if I'm Connor McGovern, I'm like, Ed, can we stop meeting like this? Like,
yeah, I can understand where it gets tiresome.
It gets tiresome. DBs and wide receivers, the same thing. You are every single play. And, you know, if social media were to tell us anything about both of those positions, they're also like the loudest talkers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they should be. 803-0550, the number to call. Thomas up next. Thomas, how are we doing this morning?
Good. How are you guys doing? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Yeah, I can't wait to get done with the work week and focus on a little bit of football as we get closer to the season.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Yeah, I caught the end of the kind of the rookie discussion and these draft picks, especially the top draft picks and how they impact the team. I think, at least I caught the end of the conversation, how they impact the team right away. I wonder how much of that really, and I'm not in the locker room. I'm not coaching the team, so I'm not trying to be that hard on these guys. But how much of that is the coaching staff kind of breaking them in? When I look around the league, some of these other guys, they get them, okay, first-round picks, and they just put them in, you know, high snap counts, high downs, and they put them in and they ride with it. You know, I think about like Harrison in Arizona. He probably struggled a little bit, and you'd have to compare the snap counts. But I wonder, compared to our guy, Coleman, how many plays did they play versus each other? And then when they struggle, do they leave them in there? Because I feel like, and it might not be McDermott, but McDermott pulls back on that snap count when a guy's a rookie. I think about Kincaid, too. You know, he showed highlights. And then it's like, oh, well, then next thing you know, he's not out there for, you know, a day or two. And you're like, what happened to this guy? And like you're saying about some of those defensive players, Oliver, Epinesa is one that he I don't really know. I'd have to look at the stats. You guys know him better than me. How much did he do his rookie year? And then why didn't he play more to break him into the league faster? I don't know. And then get your guys' thoughts on that. Because I think about, like, the Eagles, right? I know he's a hell of a player, but Dijon played a ton right from the get-go, right? From immediate impact. And I'm not saying that our guy, Bishop, was at all on that same level. And I believe that I'm remembering that there was an injury at Bishop.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But do we hold back our guys and integrate them into the league slower than other teams? And is that the player or is that the coaching style of, hey, I'm going to put this guy out there every down and he's going to mess up and we're going to be okay with it?
Yeah, Thomas, thanks for the call. That's been something I think people have brought up for a long time with the Bills is, do they slow play their rookies? I think the last few years, the answer would be no. Osiris Torrance has started every game at right guard since coming into the league. Keon Coleman was one of their starting receivers and then eventually got injured. But he also wasn't helping them for a little while there when, you know, guys like Khalil Shakir went down. They had to make adjustments and stuff like that. Epinesa's
Christian Benford raced.
Benford started
ahead of the pecking order, even.
As a sixth-round pick, he got right in there. The last few years, they have absolutely leaned more on rookies. Would help them in the early years of Allen's ascension. They had a bit of an older team in the sense of it was, you know, elder statesmen. Hyde and Poyer were working. Trey White was already there. Matt Milano was already there. But Edmonds as well, when he came in his rookie year, was their starting middle linebacker day one. They have slow played some of them. I don't disagree with that. And one of them, the guy you brought up, is Epinesa. Epinesa effectively had a redshirt year to get to a better playing weight. They really kind of changed how he played from when he was at Iowa. So his first 2 years, he only has 2.5 sacks total. That's it for through 2 years. Then he's kind of found his mold now, which is about a 6-sack guy. He's had 6.5, 6.5, 6.
He's a rotational piece that it seems like he is who he is at this point of. He's going to give you a solid set of production throughout the season. And that's going to be pretty much it. It's kind of funny, like, you know, starting, quote unquote, with a rotational defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
In 5 years, he's started 17 games. Last year, it was 13 of them. And that's more or less, you're playing the first snap, but snap count is going to matter more than playing the first snap, for example, there. But I think it's also, there was a little bit more hope around Epinesa because of what he did in 2023, which was he had several bat downs at the line. He started to really show a proficiency for that and even came away with 2 interceptions and a pick 6 against Washington.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, maybe this guy can have a little bit more of these impact plays. We're seeing it right now. And last year, it's just, you know, more of the same of you're going to get something solid out of him, but not spectacular. And is solid, not spectacular, more acceptable when it comes to a second round pick? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
But you should be able to hit from anywhere in the draft, no matter who you are as a general manager. We see it all the time. You mentioned Max Crosby. Trey Hendrickson was a third round pick.
Yeah.
Like, and the guy leads the league in sacks the last 2 years. Like, this is not an accident. It's just players are who they are sometimes.
And I think with that, with the Bills,
I think AJ is, he's a safe pick.
Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with the higher floor, lower ceiling type. You need players like that on your roster. It is, what does the rest of the roster look like? How could I fill it out? And at defensive end in particular, they have struggled at finding the game breaker.
Because it feels like that's where they've gone. They've gone safe guys, not going to take too many risks early. Because I think that has changed. The problem is now they've gone for more boom-bust type players. That's where you do get Keon Coleman. And even to a certain extent, like Isaac Dalton Kincaid, just looking at the offense, they're more boom-bust. In the first few drafts, though, outside of Josh Allen, it was a lot of safer picks. Not every one of them, but a lot of them. Where, you know, Ed Oliver, Yeah, he's the second best D tackle outside of Quinn and Williams. You take him. Right. Like, just
the player fell to you. Okay.
He's going to work.
Twist my arm.
But Rousseau, Basham, Epinesa, all relatively high floor, but potentially low ceilings, especially Basham and Epinesa. I mean, I remember sitting there with that draft after, you know, what would that have been, that Friday, the rounds 2 and 3, and just kind of sitting there going, like, everyone sort of knew neither player would break out, that they were going to be probably pieces on your roster, but that there was no high-end potential. Rousseau has a bit of high-end potential, but that is where I get excited for this draft class. It felt like three of their first four picks were all high-potential guys. Max Harrison, we brought it up a lot. He has that elite physical trait that you just don't often find at the end of round one, his breakaway speed. He could be a guy that, knowing this Bills team gets turnovers pretty regularly, they stay around where they have been the last few years in terms of total takeaways. He could play a huge part of that. TJ Sanders, the last D tackle of this class that is perceived to have any real pop as a pass rusher, there is considered a pretty hefty ceiling for him. Deion Walker absolutely is that. 6'7", if he slims down, you find out about the back injury, there might be a really special player in there for them.
And as a fourth rounder, that's a good investment to make.
They got high potential players there. Even going back to last year, I mentioned it. Keon Coleman is a high potential player. Maybe the floor isn't great, and maybe he never really reaches that potential. That's why it's potential and not, you know, what they are. It's why he was, you know, later on in the first round, or well, actually second round. And then Bishop. We talked about his measurables last year or yesterday. 6'2", 200 pounds, runs a 4.45. He might be a real problem on this Bills defense. But for right now, we don't know. He's a high potential guy. I'm glad they've gone towards that route because I think it has hurt them in the last few years of going the safer, high floor guys. We know they're going to be NFL players, but we don't really know past that. I think it's really hurt their pass rush. It's also why they've had to go constantly into the offseason trying to make a big swing on the defensive line. Von Miller maybe being like the most obvious one. Now, again, that kind of worked, but then he got hurt. That was going
to
work.
That was going to be the we've got it figured out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's pretty much where it was, that, yeah, we're going to pay a premium for him, but we know what we're getting, which is still top-end type player for at least a couple of years, because the mindset was this is the last hurrah with this core.
Yep, and he was going to be that last piece to get you over the hump, but he tears his ACL in Detroit.
Oh, my God.
803-0550, the number to call. Chris, we'll get to you here in our final segment coming up. If you can hang on, this is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we get you ready for Sabres Live coming up at the top of the hour. Let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Chris is up next. Chris, we've only got a few minutes here.
I'll make it quick. You guys were just talking about FNS and some of the other defensive ends with the Bills. Tell me if I'm wrong. You know, I'll admit it. I think Rousseau has been overhyped. I think he's kind of like an also ran. He's a decent athlete. He, you know, he'll give you the 4, 5, 6 sacks. I wouldn't have been surprised if they didn't re-sign him. I think he's kind of an overhyped defensive end. It's in the defensive end position with the Bills, kind of seems like when Kelly retired, how many quarterbacks did we bring in here until we finally got Josh Allen? It's like when Bruce Smith, and again, to find him, that's like a, you know, generational player, but it seems like they've been chasing the defensive end position forever too as well. And they're throwing multiple players thinking that one of them is going to rise to the top. I wasn't thrilled about the Von Miller signing. I was kind of meh about, Bosa. But I don't know. What's your thought on that?
Appreciate it, Chris. And thanks for keeping that quick. We got about 2 minutes to let this roll here. Greg Rousseau, the production does have to improve. I would agree with you there. However, I do look at it as also the entirety of the regime. Brandon Bean has had a hard time getting that impact defensive end. The one that was going to work tore his knee up in Detroit. Von Miller was going to be that guy, and he was looking like that guy the minute that he signed with Buffalo. He was still keeping up his top-tier production. Greg Rousseau, he did look like he was going to start benefiting from Miller in 2022.
He was benefiting,
He was already at 8 sacks. He had 8 sacks in the year. He had 8 sacks last year. step it up. It's you just got your extension. They're paying you for what you can do, not for what you are. And I would imagine this is going to be, I would hope you get an ascension here from him and a next step, because the caller's right. Like, there is something that is missing.
Oh, yeah. I think Rousseau, though, might be properly rated. I think Bills fans, you talk about him a lot because he's our player, but
right.
I think nationally he's not really well known. I will say, though, his sacks, he's been around 8 when he plays a full season, 23 not so much, but last year 8 sacks, his QB pressures went up 10 from his season best the year prior to 35. He's top 25 in most pass rushing categories with an overall weak supporting cast on the defensive line that is not nearly as consistent as he is. We'll see now, though, with the additions. He, I think, is the guy that maybe could take advantage the most.
And that'll do it for us here today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. He's Zach Jones. I'm Derek Kramer. Joe Kelly producing. And guess what? We've got Sabres Live coming up next here on WGR.
Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all gotta stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.